seminar. What a wonderful seminar we're having. And we're calling it, Who is in charge of our inner genius? And who is in charge of our inner genius? We have that on each page. This is seminar lecture 2. Who is in charge of our inner genius? This is a fun part, or not. It all depends on where you are in your consciousness. The topic is the meaning of absolute and relative. The meaning of how I live what I believe is true about me here and now, the value of living in the relative, and the value of knowing the meaning of absolute. The meaning of absolute and relative. The meaning of how I live what I believe in, is this true now, here? Is this true where I am right now? What is the meaning of absolute and relative? Well, now, in our course, the Art and Science of Wholeness, we go into absolute and relative in the beginning, and we point out that the absolute is the allness, and the relative is the human. The relative is the everyday activity that we have in our life. Do you want to live in the relative? And the answer is yes. Do you want to live in the absolute? And the answer is no. Because in the absolute, you do not have any sensitivity toward emotions or feelings or touching one another or knowing about one another. You are totally free of all relationships, totally free of all attitudes which might bind you one person to another. You're just totally free. And what value is there in being totally free? To a human being, there's no value at all. To a human being, being totally free is the attitude that you have no responsibility, you have no nothing. But we have Gloria here, and she's teaching mathematics. And what is she teaching? She is teaching A, B, C, D, E. She's teaching A to the beginners, B to the secondary, C to the advanced, and then on into more advanced teachings. Now, why would anyone want to have advanced teachings in mathematics in their normal everyday life? Well, if you have advanced mathematics in your normal everyday life, you are able to think in the unlimited area of life. If you don't have it, you are bound to 1 plus 1 is 2, and multiplication, division, subtraction, and a few of those things. You're limited to everything. And the reason that you're limited to everything is that you are not yet ready to utilize and know the higher levels of mathematics. Now, in Gloria's classes, what is she doing? She's teaching the students on certain levels. And when they're ready for a higher level, she gives them a class on higher level mathematics. Now, if she were to take from this group all of you who are interested in mathematics, she'd get about 3 of you, maybe 2. And you'd be interested in mathematics. Now, how many of you would be interested in higher mathematics? Well, virtually none, because you can see no value to it. Have you ever seen a Nassau formula, a NASA prescription, you might say, for their space activity? What sort of symbols do they use, Gloria? And I'm not going to ask you, I'm just going to tell you. But what sort of symbols do they use? They use X, Y, Z, N, and they use the various symbols that reflect higher mathematics. Now, for you and for me, certainly for me, is an area that I'm not familiar with. I am not into higher mathematics. But if I went to NASA's training school, I would learn that as a matter of fact. Because you have to have the higher mathematics to take you into the level of understanding space travel. You have to have higher mathematics to take you into the level of understanding how to go from here to there and come back. And how to have timing, and how to have this. You got to have astronomy too. You know, you got to know astronomy. You got to know how the planets are moving around and where they're going to be. Because if you bring people back from outer space and the planet's not there, they just go wandering off into space. And it's quite unlikely that you'll ever get them back again. Now, to send them off and bring them back to a tiny one-point location, right there, that table, that's a ship in the middle of the ocean that's going to receive it back, not in the ship or on the ship, but next to the ship. It's not going to hit the ship. They don't want them to crash into that ship. That'd make a mess out of the ship and the astronauts. But they want them to crash into the ocean right near the ship. Now, that takes some pretty beautiful figuring, some high, high mathematics. That's working in absolute figures. That's working in an area that we would very seldom, if ever, go into ourselves because we have no call for it. What does Mary do? Mary figures out how much fertilizer she's going to sell. She figures out how much corn she's going to sell. She figures out how much of her product of chickens and stuff like that she's going to have. And that's very low, low, low mathematics. And that's fine. Very complicated even at that. But it's very low. It's the starter mathematics. Now, if Mary were asked by the government, and they said, Mary, we would like you to create a food substance for us that we can feed to our astronauts. But you'll also have to create the container in which the food substance is to be held so that they can eat it. You're going to have to create something that's going to be cooked or not cooked, but it's going to have to be something that they can utilize it. They're going to have to be able to chew it. They're going to have to be able to swallow it. They're going to have to be able to drink fluids. They're going to have to do these things. Now, to do that, you enter into higher math once again. Because you're using a realm of figures that are so complex, so beautifully complex. It's like the astronaut bringing an astronaut, like NASA bringing an astronaut back from outer space, just from the moon alone. Remember when you read about the astronauts going to the moon, what a glorious adventure that seemed to be? Well, that's nothing. They're thinking of Mars and they're thinking of many other places. But think of the magnitude of mathematics that it takes to do those figures. It is fantastic. Another little area, just for kicks. Take Bill Gates. And you say to Bill Gates, hey Bill, you're Bill right now. Hey Bill, how much money you got? I don't know. Check with my accountant. Well, why don't you know? I mean, that's wonderful to have money, you know, and you don't even know what money you have. My goodness sakes, you are not a human being at all. Humans want to know how much money they have. And really, they don't. Humans only want to be able to use it. They don't need to know how much they have. They don't need to know where it's stored, how they maintain it, how they keep it growing and growing. All they want to do is have it available. So most humans, including Bill Gates, do not go into higher mathematics about their finances. They don't do that. And the reason they don't do that is because it doesn't turn them on. Now Mary is going to be turned on to higher mathematics. When NASA says to her, Mary, we want the containers to be able to do this, we want this to be able to do that, we want these things to be used, can you handle it, Mary? Mary says, nothing to it. Now, Mary doesn't really mean that. Mary is so wise, because what she says is, I don't have to know it myself. I'll just go to Uncle Pete over here, the great educator, the great mathematician, and I'll have him figure it out for me and tell me what it is and how to do it. And if he can't do it, he'll know someone who does, you know? And he'll send me to some... And she doesn't care. She doesn't care how the process is done, what the process is. She doesn't care the complications of it at all. She just turns it over to someone who is aware of that, who works in absolute figures, who works in higher mathematics. You see, we all cannot know all things. We do know them, but we cannot express it. Oh, that's a dumb thing to say, isn't it? We all cannot know all things. Where did we hear that? All of our life. Where did we hear that, that we cannot know all things? We heard it from our parents, our teachers, our ministers. Oh, our ministers love that phrase. No one shall see God and live. You've heard that phrase, and how strange that is. And if you see God, you're seeing yourself, and you see yourself every time you, what? Look in the mirror. Every time you wash your body, you're looking at God. Every time you do anything with your body, your shell, you're looking at God. Now, God is not the shell. God's what's inside. But you're God. You're fantastic. Now, higher mathematics is so beautiful. When they took on Beethoven and they took on Mozart, they took on Heifetz, they took on all these musicians and composers, and they took their music and they fit them, and it fits very well, they fit the music into a mathematical equation. And fitting it into that mathematical equation, they found that music is all mathematics. Music is medium mathematics, higher, and so on. The more intricate you get in your music, the more intricate you get in the utilization of the tones of the music and the various tones that they have and the various keys, on the mathematical score, it is big stuff. Now, this is a silly thing, and we've mentioned it before, but it's a very silly thing. Mathematics is an organized, basic, sound structure. Music is an organized, basic, sound structure. It is the same now and always. To achieve certain mathematical schemes, to achieve certain musical schemes, you have to use the same type of mental figuring. But this factor blows the minds of everyone who hears it. The most complex mathematical factor known to humanity, and truly this is like in the upper levels of the absolute, if there are upper levels of the absolute, the level of mathematical equation that understands confusion is one of the highest levels of mathematical equations that are out, far greater than anything NASA uses. And I say, how can confusion have a mathematical equation about it when confusion is just confusion? Scientists, by saying, I think so, and then going out and finding out that it is so, because they thought what they thought, and what they thought is, scientists went out and they found that if you go far enough with confusion, you find it is harmony and balance. If you go far enough into confusion, you find that it is harmony and balance. So all the things, the noise that we hear and we call confusion, all the things that we think is confusion and just driving us up the wall because it's so, the drop, drop, drop of the water, and then tick, 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 and click, 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 and tick, 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 and tick, click, and tick, 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 and you think, what confusion? Well, you listen long enough with a tuned-in awareness, and you'll find a mathematical formula that is being played out by the water that's dropping out of a faucet. The drops of water that fall out of a faucet. And then you find the mathematical formula getting smaller and getting larger depending upon the volume of water coming out of the faucet. When the drops of water are very small, then your formula is larger. When a lot of water is coming out, your formula is smaller, because the predictability of a lot of water coming out of the faucet is more harmonious with the mathematical scheme than the predictability of a little bit of water coming out of a faucet. And its variableness is so great and so confusing, the scientists really have to do some deep thinking about it. In fact, I think I mentioned it to you a time before. They now have a university of confusion. Isn't that interesting? They have a school that teaches you the laws governing confusion in life. I mean, you can't even have confusion anymore. It has become something so magnificent, something so understandable through principle and through law. Now, the things that I have just said would be enough to titillate anyone's mind saying, my goodness, hey, that's interesting. I really don't want to know. I don't want to hear any more about it. I don't want to be part of it. I don't want anything to do with it. It's just too much for me. It's just too much for my mind. But you have always known it, and now you know that you know it. And now you say you don't want to know what you know that you know, and it can't be done. You cannot deny that you know what you know, now that you know it. And you certainly don't know all of it by what I've just said. I have merely titillated the surface of this for you, gotten your interest a little bit touched by this. But the thing is, you know now. You know. It's like the phrase for the woman. She's just a teensy-weensy bit pregnant. There's no such thing as that, is there? You're either pregnant or you aren't. And this is what the principle is. The principle is that you know or you don't know. You always knew and you always know, but you say you don't know because if you say you know, then you're going to be held responsible for what you're supposed to know. You know? Like kids come up to you and they say, I know how to do this, I know that, I know the other thing. And you say, okay, go ahead. But how do you make it work? You see, they have the principle of knowing that they know. And they have the sensitivity that they know. But they want to go that step further, which is where we are going today. They want to go that step further from knowing that they know intuitively and actually knowing. Now, how do you make the step from knowing that you know it to knowing it, utilizing it, and working with it? Well, A scientist who finds something that he knows, and he knows he doesn't yet know all that he wants to know about what he knows, he has a very simple problem on his hands. He just begins to probe it. He begins to test it. He begins to put it against scientific principles and scientific facts. He's just putting it against a normal litmus test of finding out how something functions, chemically or physically or mathematically or any other way. Now, as the scientist does this, he does not say, "I don't know." And yet he doesn't know, really. He knows that it's so, but he doesn't know how it can be so or where it's so or how he could not necessarily prove it, but how he could show the possibility that it can actually be. You see, we don't have to actually do something to prove something. We just prove the possibility that it can be done. And when we prove the possibility that it can be done, then we have proven that it exists. So, the scientist will take the theorem, he'll take the possibility, and he will run it through his tests. And why does IBM maintain this gigantic computer? This gigantic, gigantic computer that they used to have other names for it previously, but why do they still maintain it when the computers today, my little AirBook is just a little thing, and it can do everything that that can do. But what can IBM's computer do? Any of you have an inkling of an idea of what it might do? What can it do that my little computer cannot do? My little computer can do it, but what does it do that my little computer works hard at doing? It does it faster. It does it faster. For you to come to the conclusion of an infinite number against another infinite number with other infinite numbers added on, making up a grandly infinite number, is, you know, crazy. How could you think it? How could you know it? And yet these scientists know it. In their intuitive awareness, they know it and they follow it. And in their intuitive awareness, they use the proper techniques to reveal it to themselves out of the allness. Now, we're talking about the relative and the absolute. And we have moved in quite a few steps further. We've moved in the mathematics and music. We've moved into the relative absolute. We've moved into confusion. We've moved into all of these various areas. And all of these areas exist in the finite as well as in the infinite. And if we will just allow ourselves the privilege of knowing all things in the finite, in the relative, if we would allow ourselves that privilege, then we would also know everything in the infinite. It would just be needing a big computer to compute the figures quickly enough so it'd be done in your lifetime. Because running that through, for Bill Gates to count his money, he would have to be a most amazing man. He keeps count of his money through his banking arrangements. And, all right, here's $1 billion. Now, you can have whatever you can count in 20 minutes. That's not very nice, is it? You can have whatever you can count in 20 minutes. And you say, "I'm in charge here. You're in charge. All right. I want them in billion-dollar denominations." Oh, getting pretty smart, aren't you? Right? Is that a good idea? Is that an idea that would work? If Bill Gates had to count his money, he would just say, how many billion have I got? He doesn't say how many dollars that I have, how many hundreds, how many thousands, how many millions. He doesn't say any of that because he doesn't think in those little terms. He is in the infinite in his thinking of money, and he is no longer in the finite. He does not worry about his hamburger, you know. He doesn't worry what it costs. He doesn't say, how much did that hamburger cost? He doesn't even probably carry money with him. He has aides who are walking with him all the time. Anybody with that capacity always has bodyguards and other things, and they carry the change. And he doesn't pay bills. Why should he pay bills? He has a bookkeeping and accounting department who do those things. We have to do that mundane stuff. Now, do you have the intelligence to say, oh, I can have all the money I can count in 20 minutes. Okay, give them to me in billion-dollar bills. You say, well, that's not fair. What's unfair about that? Did you think about it? Did you think the way you would like to do it, where you would have the most at your disposal? Not because you're greedy or anything. We're not talking about greed. We're not talking about any emotion that the human has. We're just talking about the physiological fact of money and counting. And how do you count it? All right. You have $1 trillion. You know what $1 trillion is? Or $1 trillion, whatever your country's denomination here in Nigeria is. What are your big ones here?
1,000.
No. The big name of your bill. A lira, what is it?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Huh? 1,000 lira.
But it's not 1,000 lira, it's lira.
Lira, yes.
Okay, now, do you have a billion lira?
We have it.
Yeah, sure. Could you have $1 trillion lira?
Of course, yes.
All right. You see, so you can think in your own denomination, in your own money, in that level. But she was trying to keep me down in 1,000 lira, you know. She wanted to keep me in that baby language, in that baby talk stuff, you know. I mean, that's yesterday. I mean, you know, we're $1 trillion now. We're $1 trillion lira. And nice figure, isn't it? So how do we do? How can you get from your relative limited self to your absolute awareness of that? This is where absolute comes in that is so beneficial to us. It's not that we want to live in the absolute where you don't touch one another because there's nothing to touch, you know? No hugs anymore in the absolute. Never were any hugs in the absolute. There's no awareness in the absolute of a tenderness or a sensitivity. That's something the relative knows. That's something the human knows, and that's a very lovely thing. Now, here you. That's why they always like to paint Scrooge and the miser, the person of money, as being cold. They want to paint them as being cold because they are just dealing with cash. They're just dealing with money. They're dealing with hard, cold cash. And as they're dealing with hard, cold cash, what are they doing? They're dealing with something that does not have emotions. Okay. How do we understand the relative, and how do we understand absolute? How do we understand that we can live in both worlds and be very, very elegant about it? How do we understand that? Well, just as simple as understanding what a NASA scientist is with his complex scientific figures, mathematical formula that he uses to take a person from the moon and back. Now, tell me, what do you think of this? How would a person be who was here and they wanted to be there? Say, for instance, you want to come visit me in California. With a snap of your finger, you want to telecommunicate, you teleport, you want to, what did you do in Star Trek? You beam me up, Scotty. What was going on? All the cells of your body, all the beingness that your body is, emotional, physical, mental, spiritual, everything, had to intact go in and intact come out. So when you come visit me in California, you're not going to be empty of your spiritual values or empty of your mental values or empty of your physical values. You're just a talking cloud. You know, you want to be there just like you are here. Now, if you don't think that would be a complex formula, my goodness sakes, it surely would. But can it be done? Yes, it can. Did they do it on Star Trek? All the time. But that's just a science fiction movie. Well, science fiction is the forerunner for most science facts. Buck Rogers and everything else, all science fiction that became science fact. But just think, to take a human form with human emotions, with human body, with human everything, and change it from nothing here, poof, into something there, instantly. What a most amazing thing that would be. And they are doing it with animals. They are doing it with worms and other various things. In their scientific laboratories, they're conducting all sorts of experiments to move an object from one place to another and keep it in its absolute perfect form after the move. It's called reconstituting it. They disconstitute it and they reconstitute it, and they take it from here and they take it over here, and when they bring it from one place to the other, it is exactly like it was when they left. Now, would you say that's rather something? Would you say scientific formulas even go further than they would if the astronaut was coming back from outer space and you had to figure out how to have him hit that point in the middle of the ocean? Interesting. Very fast. But it can be done. And all of these things are being done through mathematics. Now, you do not have to do the mathematics yourself. You see, we want to help you, I want to help you, to move from the point of relative to the point of absolute without mathematical formulas, without music, without anything at all, just going from here to here in total. I want to do that with you. How can I do that with you? How could I do that with you? I can do that with you by one simple thing: knowing it is done. Do you think people teleport right now? Do you think that people go from one place to another and take their body? Have you ever gone to visit your mommy or your daddy or your friends or whomever, and in your dream? Have you ever mentally traveled around and gone to visit people and actually seen their house, seen them act in whatever life? You weren't peeking into their lives, you were just participating. People do that all the time. Now, when people come to the awareness that they do it, and then do it knowing that they do it, they will bypass all the mathematical formula. The mathematical formula will be there. It will be the underlying truth that is activating itself in that action. But you won't have to know it. NASA won't have to know it. Science will not have to know it. It exists. Formula in mathematics for all of the simple things of Earth exist. All those formulas exist. Can you agree with me that they exist? Can you understand they exist?
Yeah.
They exist. Just because you don't use them, that doesn't mean they don't exist, you know. They exist. Now, do we have to use them in the mathematical way that we've become accustomed to? Let's take the autistic child. The autistic child, however it became autistic, it became autistic. What we are doing, we're looking at the child doing something absolutely fantastic. The child can do mathematical figures, he can do all sorts. Now, the child does not sit there as you give him a mathematical equation, and he does not do it in his mind. He waits for you to finish giving him the mathematical equation, and at the instant you finish giving him the mathematical equation, he gives you back the answer correct. Now, how can he do that? He is using a principle that we have not been aware of. He's using a principle that shows that mathematics is so supreme and so fabulous and so glorious. It is really magic. But he's using this principle, and you can, and you do. Now, could you use the techniques that the autistic child uses, or autistic adult? Usually they get over it in later years. But could you do the magic that they do? And the answer is yes. Now, why? Because it's a mathematical principle. When you tune in, somehow, to this mathematical principle, you tune in to all mathematical principles. Now, no matter what Grace says, she is still a very, very stupid lady. She doesn't know the principle that brings an astronaut from there to here. She does not know how to count a billion figures instantly as a question and instantly as an answer. She doesn't know that. But am I right or am I wrong? She knows that. But she doesn't know that she knows it. And as long as she doesn't know that she knows it, she's not going to use it, and thereby she will not have the benefit of it. When is she going to have the benefit of it? When is she going to look at the students in her class who are studying mathematics, and when is she going to say to those students, you are geniuses. You are absolutely magnificent. You have in you the capacity to do these wonderful things that we've been talking about today. And the students will look at her and say, I think I'm getting out of this class. It's just too much for me. Or they will say, she knows, she knows. She may not be able to help us do it just yet, but she knows that it is there. She knows that it works. She knows, she knows. And what a wonderful thing to know. That's like knowing, you know, I know that I know that I know. The divine in me knows the answer. Say those things and be those things and do those things and watch those things be your miracle. Watch those things be your joy. Watch those things be the thing that turns your whole life on to an attitude and to an expression that's far beyond anything humanity has ever known. Now you look at King Arthur and you think of him as being a fictitious king. He was really a king. But you look at his relationship with who? Who did he have a relationship with?
Merlin.
And what was Merlin? A magician. And what was a magician? What did the magician do? He used principles that other people didn't use. In The Sorcerer's Apprentice with Mickey Mouse and by Disneyland, they had Mickey Mouse listening to his sorcerer and learning his techniques. and then saying them when the sorcerer was out and flooding the whole compound. But we think that's silly. But it's not silly. That's not silly. That is something that is very real. And it's something that you are aware of. It's something that you sort of snicker inside yourself, saying, yeah, I've been there, done that. I've had that in my thought. I've had that in my dreams. And you can have it in your dreams right now. Now, what is going to change Grace from a stupid lady to the genius that she already is? Anyone tell me? You got your hand up. Are you going to tell me? You're not going to tell me. You're just putting your hand up because you think you want to support your mom, huh? Okay. Now, Grace, what's going to take what you are being told now and change it from being stupid to being something absolutely brilliant?
My thoughts.
Yeah, your thought. Your thought, I know that I know that I know, the divine in me is the answer. When you begin to use that in every area of your work, because, I mean, your work is profound. Your work is astounding. Your work is beyond imagination when you reach out into the fields that the astronauts are. And they're teaching that in the technical universities where astronautical studies are being done. It's common everyday stuff. But to know the answer without having some gigantic, fantastically fast computer give you the answer, to have the autistic answer, it's done. It's done. The autistic child does do it. This is not something I'm just making up for happiness' sake. This is something that's true. You can read all about it. Look up autism in your network on the internet and on WikiUPA University, and they'll give you all the free information you want on what's going on. And you'll find that the autistic, A-U-T-I-S-T-I-C, the autistic being, the autistic child, the autistic expression is something, it's there. Now, what took place in the brain to make it be there? What little quirk happened in the brain? What fifth cigarette or nicotine or coke or cocaine or what other stupid thing clicked it on? Nothing. The autistic children didn't have any of those drugs. Their parents were not on drugs either. What clicked it on? Some little machinery clicked in their brain for some reason to make it go. Now, could we make it go for ourselves? Could we say, I know that I know? Could we put that cause in motion and enjoy it? And no longer be stupid? You see, Grace has to say she's stupid because she knows way up here is where I want to go with knowledge and wisdom and understanding into this infinite cosmic expression, you know. And I'm just down here at the beginning of the complex mathematical field. But if she says that, she'll never go any further. But if she says, I am living in an exciting adventure, I have chosen mathematics, just like Chioma, her daughter, chose mathematics to do it beautifully and fantastically. And what did her son, Ugo, do? Ugo listened to a lecture that I gave him, and he says, you know, I think I want to be working with psychology. And so he became a psychologist. He became a psychiatrist. And became a good psychiatrist, and he was invited into this organization to be part of their team, part of their staff. And then after he was there, he had a clientele of people that he worked with, that they gave him, who wanted his special help. So he opened his own office. And that's only after a couple of years. After a couple of years, he is so good because he's working on the genius level. He's working on the genius level. Now, the next level will be to get the people he works with to believe that he's fantastic and then have them walk into his office and say to these people, pick up your bed and walk. Say these words after me, and it's done. And you say, the divine in me knows the answer, and I know all things. I'm now surrounded by all good. I have the ideal husband now. Yeah. Why not? It's all thought, isn't it? It's all thought. I have the ideal wife. Right now, I have the ideal children. Do you have the ideal children? Why do you say you have the ideal children, Mary? Huh?
I have ideal children.
Because it's so, isn't it? It's so, isn't it? Do they always do everything they're supposed to do, whenever they're supposed to do it, in a perfect way? Yes! If you ever said anything different, you're in trouble. Because you're dynamite, and when you put causes in motion, oh man, you get results. All of you are the same way. Now, we want to play the game of the relative to understand the Nassau studies, to understand those things. We want to get into the Wikipedia dictionary on the internet. It's a free dictionary that's made up of everything, and what you do when you look up something there and you have some information to add to it, you add that information right away to that source. Of course, you better be right. But that dictionary is constantly being upgraded. The encyclopedia is constantly being upgraded. It's fantastic, and it's free. It's absolutely amazing. Now, how do you get from being a relative person that, if you prick me, do I not bleed, as he said in The Merchant of Venice? How do you get to the point where people say things to you and you're untouched? Or how do you get to the point where you say things and all the world is peace? Where you say things and everybody on the face of the earth lives harmoniously with themselves, enjoying all of the abundance that would make for their happy life, all of the food, all of the water, all of the other substances necessary for a fulfilled life. You could say that. You can put that cause in motion if that is important to you. But that's on the relative level. On the absolute level, there's nothing to remedy. There's nothing to change. On the absolute level, there is nothing to be made better because all is the best. There is nothing to be made better because all is the best right now. There's nothing we attempt to do, to get, to find, to experience. There's nothing we attempt to put into motion for ourselves at all. Because all we want to do in moving from the relative to the absolute is move in the awareness it is done now. Now. Who said this? Now is the acceptable time of my good. The Bible gave us that. Many other beautiful statements. Now. Now we live in the wholeness of all. Now we live in the fulfillment of all. Now we live, and it's not a matter of the relative. The relative, if I may tell you this, the relative does not possess now. The relative now does not exist in the relative world. Because the relative world has a past and a future and present. The relative world has all those things, and they are not real. They are not absolutely, categorically, eternally the same. They're always doing what? Can anyone tell me what they're always doing? And what makes keeps them from being real?
Changing.
Yeah, say it?
Changing.
That's exactly right. They are always changing, and anything that is always changing is not immortal and eternal. Principle does not change. The law does not change. Truth does not change. In fact, there is no such thing as truth. Truth begs of having an opposite, falseness. There is no truth and false. There is false and there is truth, but they are not a comparison. It is true you don't have any shoes on. It is false that you don't have shoes. Now, does it matter that you have shoes on or don't have shoes on?
No.
It only matters to you. And that doesn't even matter to you. I want you, by the time our week together is over here, I want you to live in the conscious awareness that you are absolutely unaware of your body, mind, and spirit. You are not aware of your body, mind, and spirit. You are still living. You are still utilizing your body, mind, and spirit. But you're unaware. When you walk down the street and you're not even aware of your body, doesn't it feel good? No, you don't even know what you're feeling. But it doesn't feel bad. And when you eat a meal, you say, oh, that feels so good. Well, now, what if you didn't eat? Would you say, oh, that doesn't feel good? You see, I want you to get to the point where you mentally exist in absolute and physically delight in the relative. You need nothing of the relative. You want nothing of the relative. The relative means nothing to you except that it's just there. You have no attitudes about anything. You are just totally, unconditionally in love with yourself and all in your world. And now, if I am the creator of my world, and I must confess I'm a very good creator, but if I am the creator of my world, why would I want to change it? Huh? Why would I, in my universal, infinite consciousness, my infinite awareness of all that is true and good, why would I ever want to change something I created and called good and very good? Now, as we understand God from Genesis, did God create everything and call it good?
Yes.
Now, quickly, say it.
Yes.
He called everything good, didn't he?
Yes.
Now, why would he ever want to change anything? Did he make a mistake with Adam and Eve?
No.
Did he make a mistake with the world?
No.
And did he say, go out and do likewise?
Yes.
He sure did. Now, are you going out and doing likewise, or are you going out and say, I don't know how, I can't do this, oh dear me, you know, it's such a terrible thing. That's not fair to make a little person like me, a child like me, or an old person like me, or a middle person like me, or, you know, whatever. I'm 25. I'm old enough to know the facts of life, you know. I'm old enough to know the principle. I'm old enough to put it in motion, and I do. Now, are you old enough to do it? Are you old enough to know that you, as God, that's what we have as our morning talk, you know. Why can I say I'm God? You, as God, are the creator of everything. And could you create as good as you did in Genesis?
Yes.
I say, in Genesis, it was written by people who didn't know any better. The people who wrote Genesis had that as their max understanding of what God can do. You notice how they didn't go into a lot of details on a lot of stuff? It was just a quick summary. God created and it was so. They didn't go into a lot of details. Other comic books and funny books, they go through details trying to say that they didn't know what God didn't know what he's doing. But we know better. We know better. Now, in one area, is there peace on earth? And if there's peace on earth, where did it start? It started with us. It started right here with us. It started with our words and our belief and our conviction and our understanding. That's what started it. Now, how long will peace last? As long as we see it done. Excuse me? Yes?
Forever.
Forever. As long as we see it done, that's it. Now, the moment we see conflict, the moment we see people not getting along, instantly, what do? All is in divine order. No way. All is in divine order. Now, you elected a governor and a president here in Nigeria. I mean, how many clowns did you have to go through to find one that was acceptable, huh? We say in the United States, how many clowns do we have to go through until we find a president that the United States wants, you know, that the people want? And what did the people get? They got this stupid black man to be president. Stupid black man. He is probably one of the most beautiful, spiritually illumined beings that the world has ever known. He is a man of magic. He really cares about the community. He really cares about the people. He really cares about the people first. And he and his wife are just a beautiful example of happily married life. Maybe they're not happy, but they look like it. And their kids are great. And the world is great. And he is making decisions constantly. And he's going against so many different possibilities. But the thing is, at all times, he says, it'll work out. It'll work out because it's for the good of the people. It'll work out because it's right. It'll work out because this is it. And the various House legislation, the Republicans and Democrats, they're fighting against each other, and they're trying to stop his work just because it's not them that presented it. And so we say, huh, all is in divine order. Thank you, Mr. Obama. Thank you, Mr. Obama. We love you, Mr. Obama. We love you, Mr. Obama. Whoever thought you would be president of the United States, who would have thought a black man would be president of the United States that quickly? That quickly. And now, what's going to happen next? They're probably going to elect a woman, a black woman, as president of the United States. Fantastic, you know? My goodness. And you know, President John F. Kennedy, you heard about him?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, John F. Kennedy was absolutely verboten. Absolutely bad, 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 bad. Because he and the Pope were holding hands. He was a Catholic. And the people who were anti-Catholic in the United States, they didn't want him to be president. They said, he's going to bring the Pope in. And he's going to bring the Catholic religion, and he's going to bring this in and that in. Well, he got to be president. And he was one of our outstanding presidents. And never once did he let his religion enter into the control of the world. But he was no less a Catholic. He was one of the finest Catholics. He was a recommendation to the people who were looking at the Catholic Church and thinking that they wanted to join it. Because they look at him and say, yeah, if that church is like him, I'd like to join it, you know. But the church is never like a man, unfortunately, because even you live in the temple of the living God. You live in this church, in this body church. And some of you live in it gloriously, and others of you live in it like you're poverty stricken. And you have everything you could ever want. You have the knowledge, you have the wisdom, you have the genius, you have all the goodness. But what do you do to yourself? You tell yourself that you're not any good. You tell yourself that your life is not worthwhile. You tell yourself that you are not a good being, and you are a good being. Now, he said, just because it's now 3 o'clock, that's time for me to shut up and get ready for the discussion part of our talk. But we didn't finish off all of our stuff here. We will finish it in the term of our seminar. Because what is it we've said here? We said, who is in charge of my inner genius? The meaning of absolute and relative. The meaning of how I live, what I believe is true about me, here and now. The value of living in the relative. The value of knowing the meaning of the absolute. Actually, we covered that all quite nicely. We covered that all quite nicely, but doing it all in 45 to 60 minutes is a spectacular thing. But we will go on and we will continue with more. So we'll have our discussion after a 5-minute pause, and then we'll discuss whatever things you want. Now, if you have any questions, please write them down legibly so I can read them. And if you don't write them legibly, I'll ask you to come read it to me. But write it down legibly, and we will discuss any topic you want. Now, the only person who is exempt from our discussion is Grace, because she is writing down all her mathematical formulas there, and we don't want to mess her up while she's in the process of explaining how to do what, Grace? Beam me up, Scotty. The formula for beaming me up and beaming me on and beaming me down and beaming me over. Doesn't that sound exciting? Wouldn't it be fun if you had your own little pocket beamer and you say, I think I'll go visit Mama. Mama's on another dimension. I don't know where she is on the other dimension, but beam me to where she is. So I beam over there and she says, would you get off my back, son? I spent all these years raising you. Now I'm having fun being myself and doing what I want to do. Now go home. Take care of your family. Let me alone, you know? But Mom, I love you and I need you. You don't need me. If you needed me, you would have spent all your time with me before I was ready to move on to my next dimension. And you didn't. You had your family. You had your friends. You had your life. And you didn't really care about me. And that's true. But it's not that they didn't care. It's you have your own life. You have your own goals. You have your own program. And this is what each of us want to do. Live our life. Have our goals. Have our program. And have fun. So it is now almost 2-3 minutes after 3. So come on back about 3:15. That'll give you time to go potty and do whatever you want to do. I love you.